On the review that take public comment or questions on the Brown County budget, solid waste budget, and the Hamlin Township Fire District budget. So floor is now open for questions or comments on those budgets. Do we have any questions? Yes, Mike?
Has there been any changes since the information that we submitted at the park meetings?
Any changes?
Yes.
In the Brown County budget, for instance?
Yes, sir. Okay.
Not formalized yet. Are there any questions? I need to ask that three times to be official. You got one? Okay, one more time. Any questions or comments? No? I'll take a motion to close the hearing. From my illustrious board here.
Motion to close the hearing.
I'll second.
Motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we're now calling the county council meeting to order. So we'll have the pledge of allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Any additions or changes to the agenda? Now we've got Henry on insurance issue we want to talk about briefly. There's one. And then we've got some concerned citizens regarding voting. We're going to make a little presentation. We can have some questions there. We've got the minutes. We have any questions on the minutes from last meeting? Which actually it's for the budget hearings and the last meeting. Any questions or changes? Take a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
I'll second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Before we start, one thing I want to do is just give you a brief idea of where we're at in terms of our budgeting process. You'll see this graph on the screen here. This was done by one of our financial advisor, Baker Tilly. And you guys have seen this, so I'll tilt it this way. This is a 2023 estimated, and this is our projected ending cash balances, which means this graph line depicts our spending, meaning we're going downhill. We're spending more than we're taking in. If you look at this, from 23 to 24, we're spending about $2 million more than we are taking in. That's not too good. If you look at the next graph, from 24 to 25, we're spending another $2 million that we don't have. So this is a dire situation for our county. We are working diligently to address that. The implication is that by about 2026 or 2027, we go under. The county becomes insolvent. So we have to do everything we can to save every dollar we can to tilt this graph up this way to not only just extend it out, but to reverse it. So are there any questions on that at this point? Yes?
What's the money being spent on that we're using that much money?
That's a good question. Anybody want to? We'll ask our financial manager.
This gives you a big 30,000 foot view top down. Okay? And so I'm just going to read these off because this was a handout I was going to give the other council members. The county with an estimated revenue of $17.5 million and expenses of $20 million is $2.5 million upside down. Add insult to injury, with the recommended goal of expenses being at 85% revenues to build cash reserves would require spending cuts of over $5 million. Excluding the health and highway department, the justice system represents 62% of the employees and 71% of the labor cost. The sheriff, jail, and dispatch represent 60% of the total labor cost of the justice system. To make matters worse, the county is spending over $832,000 per year so the employees can eat lunch for free. Lastly, as of today, the group medical account, or the 4700 account, is currently negative $831,000. If this trend continues by the end of the year, the county will be in the hole $1,108,000. Now, at the core of the issue is we've allowed over the years our labor costs. We've got approximately 146 on any given day employees. And those labor costs, and included with the employee benefits package, is well over $10 million. All right? So when you ask the question, where's the money going, that's where it's going. And then on the other side of the ledger is you've got, you know, you have your fixed operating expenses, and then we've got discretionary spending. And so it's a, my estimates is, you know, because basically just what Gary said, you know, it's not any different than a household having, you know, more money going out every month than they've got coming in. And then what they're doing is they're being able to put that on the credit card. And then as they do that, the credit card continues to go up. Now, the good news is the state of Indiana is not going to let the county do that. So in essence, what we're doing is, because our expenses exceed our revenues, we're burning down any cash reserves that we have. And we've got about enough to maybe get us through to the 26-27 budget. And so my concern is we very well may likely hit the wall come the 2026 doing the 2027 budget. And so I talked to a couple people last Friday, and I've got a call into the Department of Labor and Government Finance to try to find out what happens if we can't get this turned around, and if we can't figure out how to find additional revenue sources that perhaps we don't currently have right now. So is there any opportunity out there for additional revenue? I don't know. But that's where we are, and it's a full court press going forward. I mean, we're going to have to work every month and stay on top of this thing to try to figure out the story problem, because it's one challenging story problem.
I can answer a couple of those questions for you. One, the Department of Local Government Finance will not allow, like you said, the budget to adopt greater than your revenue.
Right.
And the other option, occasionally they have an emergency levy appeal, but that's only 1 year, so it's really not a viable option for Brown County, because 1 year isn't your issue. That's if you had some major shortfall or some major catastrophe that took a lot of money. There are levy appeals out there for 1 year, but then it drops back down. So that's not an issue. When you talk about additional revenues, it's the word no one likes, and that's the increase of taxes somewhere, whether it be, of course, property taxes can only go up by the growth quotient, but there are income taxes out there that can be done and reallocated and looked at that can help that revenue source. The other revenue source would be to look at some of those user fees that are established countywide. I mean, individual counties establish their own, like building and zoning fees. Some that aren't set by statute. So, you know, unfortunately, that's the limitations of government. And you have one option, and that's to cut your spending within the amount of revenue that you have.
Right. Yeah. The only thing, too, that, and Jackie, and I talked to Eric Cook Friday night, on this, and my intent is to go sit down with him and have a conversation. I don't have the data to support it, but if I can get the data out of, you know, the activity, I'm going to refer to it as activity data. There's, you know, keep in mind, there's 26 departments, and if you back out the commissioners, back out the council, we basically got 24 little businesses. So you got the health department that kind of is independent, it runs on its own, it's got its own tax levy. And of course, we know the highway department's got its, you know, most of its revenues coming in from, you know, the Indiana Department of Revenue and other sources. So then that would leave us, if you take 26 minus 2, leaves us 24. If we take the two council and commissioners out of us, brings it down to, what, 22. But of that 22 is this, what I refer to as the justice system. And when I say this, I want to, let me walk through you to give you an idea of what I'm talking about. You've got jail, sheriff's department, dispatch, animal control, school resource, emergency management, coroner, prosecuting attorney's office, clerk's office, public defender, circuit court, probation. And so when I look at those, every one of those areas are all interdependent on each other. You know, there's not one that's going to exist. You can't have a sheriff's department, I guess, without a jail. You got to have some place to take these people when we arrest them, right? And so an issue is that if we can work together to try to grab the data, the activity data, to look at, you know, how many 911 calls do we get every month? What do we get every year? And here's my question. So we're spending $5 million a year on the justice system. And I refuse to believe that the 15,500 people that call Brown County home are all criminals. Okay? That just didn't make any sense. So I got a sneaking suspicion, if we can get the data, is that what we're doing is we are subsidizing the state of Indiana on the tourism, because the CDC has told me that they estimate we get approximately 3 million people coming into our county every year. I also know for a fact that out of that innkeeper's tax in 2024, they're going to spend $355,000 in advertising in the Chicagoland area. So we're bringing people in. We're using the innkeeper's tax. We've got people from outside of the county buying up our real estate so they can create tourist homes, while our justice system, and while we're having to pay for most of it to support, we that call Brown County home are in essence subsidizing the state of Indiana for the tourism dollars. And the reason I say that is this, is if you take 3 million people, now let's assume everybody, 2 people per car, so that would be a million five cars a year, right? They also told me that the ticket sales at the music center, 2% of the ticket sales are those that reside in Brown County. That 98% are within a 100-mile radius. So that would imply that most of the people coming to Brown County is a one-tank trip. So they fill up in Lafayette, Indiana. They drive down, spend the weekend, they go back. So if you got my point is, if you got 1.5 million cars with 2 people each, and they all come down here and spend $200. So fill up the car with gas, buy some lunch, buy a trinket, go home. Well, as you know, if you spend $100, you're going to pay 7% sales tax, are you not? $24 million a year in revenue, state of Indiana is making off Brown County at a minimum. Okay, and it's just the sales tax revenue. That's not everything else. Because as a state, if you think about it, you know, you look at government, they want to do everything within their power to get you to spend your money. And it's referred to as velocity of money. So if a person's got $50 and you can get that to continue to change hands, every time that $50 changes hands, that's $3.50 in sales tax. So their goal is to get the people in the state to spend your money. Spend it. And they love tourism because guess what? You're going to go spend your money. So here we sit in a county to where half the county is either owned by the United States Department of Agriculture, Indiana Department of Resources, or outside investors that own large swaths of real estate that's set in classified forest, or a 501(c)(3). So we don't have the taxing base, and so what's happening is that this, the cost for the justice system is expensive, and I think we're subsidizing it, and it's time that we get organized and we make a very compelling argument. I don't know where it would go. It'd probably fall on deaf ears.
I think you can add to that compelling argument. There is such a thing as food and beverage tax, and some counties, the donut counties, all have it, and part of it goes into Lucas Oil and the convention center. But you possibly could get Senator Cook to lead legislation that would allow Brown County to get food and beverage tax.
Yeah. That we could use that revenue then to subsidize the justice system, yeah.
And that would be, a lot of that revenue would come from those people who are coming on that trip.
Yeah.
They come down and eat and go to a show, or they come down and visit and eat in the restaurants, and that food and beverage then would and it can be spent on anything that the general fund can be spent on.
Okay.
You'd have to write your ordinance that way, but it can be.
I believe the town of Nashville already does that. Would the county be on top of that, or since they already have one, would the town be exempt from the county?
That I can't totally answer right yet.
Jackie, quick clarification. I think you said that the state won't approve a budget that where our expenses exceed our revenues. I think I meant...
That's correct.
You meant if we don't have the cash reserves to offset that.
That's part of your revenue. Your cash reserve is part of your revenue.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
So it's your money in the bank,
right.
Your new money, and your budget in that 18-month section.
Gotcha.
But correct.
Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed that.
Yes.
Pardon me for not being able to make out all the numbers here, but and I've not seen this graph before, but what is the reason for the big spike there in the middle from one year to the next?
Anybody want to address that?
Yeah, I think I can try here. The elephant in the room is the commissioner's office did a fantastic job bolting together the county's group medical plan, okay? But the challenge with our group medical plan is we self-insure. And on average, those medical claims, you know, are about $1 million a year. So the challenge historically has been if we can't get the budget to balance to get it passed through the DLGF, will underfund the group medical. And so, for example, right now, as of today, you know, we are $831,000 in red ink on medical. We call it the 4700 fund. So if I extrapolate that out, take the 831 divided by 9, multiply it times 12, it looks, appears that on 1231, we're going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,000,001 and a deficit. And so the challenge is that annual medical cost is $2 million, but then now we got this $1,000,001 deficit that we've got to try to make up, and that's the spike.
Okay. Is there a point where being self-insured is no longer favorable?
I mean, what we're faced with is we very well may likely have to be forced to reduce headcount. We may be forced to have to reduce the employee benefit package. You know, in my mind is that, you know, if you go out and, you know, if you go out and lease a new truck and it's $1,000 a month and you weren't quite sure whether or not you could afford it, you know, and you burn up all the cash you had in savings, at some point in time, you know, they're going to come and repo the truck. So if we've got, you know, if we've got too much government, you know, the issue is you know, how we're going to have to implement some policies that are not going to, you know, there's nothing feel good about this, right?
Well, what are the alternatives to being self-insured on medical?
Well, I mean, I've had people, the challenge with that sector, this health insurance sector, is that when they passed ARPA, right, or not ARPA, but when they passed that, there were a lot of insurers that got out of that individual group health, okay? So today it's next to impossible to try to go out and buy an individual group health policy because they all got out of it, because now you got to go to the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, right? And so now the group market is still somewhat intact. So the only option you really have is to go to what's referred to as an unbundled program. So you've got reinsurance, you've got cancer policy, you've got individual contracts that try to mitigate that risk, and then you have a plan administrator that oversees the whole thing. Well, the challenge with that is that if you try to take it to an Anthem, where you've got a fully bundled product, Anthem, premiums are going to be outrageous. Unless you're a large, you're GM with, 300,000 employees or something, right?
Well, that's what I was wondering. Are we even close to that point?
No, we're a small group. I mean, we, at 150 employees, I mean, we're a little bitty small group. And,
Jim, I was going to ask Jackie, you've got knowledge across the state of what other counties are doing. Are any of those doing other things we should be aware of?
As far as
health insurance, like other than self-insuring,
it's different statewide. There are some real great plush plans. There are some where the county pays the vast majority of a premium. There are some where they split it up. I mean, it's just depending on the county and the situation, their financial situation, what they've come to.
Yeah. And the one other thing I want to add to this is that 48% of the county employees leave the county within the first 5 years. Okay? And in addition to that, from year 6 to 10, another 25% leave. So we've got a very high attrition rate on our employees. So it's a, it's a tough story problem. Because you got, who do you bring in on the front end, and then how do you try not to lose them on the other end? And then if you go in, and then the reality of it is simply this, is that, I have had conversations with employees that, the county pays 26 pays, and so the employee gets the paycheck, and they pay their mortgage payment or their rent payment out of that paycheck. The second paycheck comes in, and then they pay, their car insurance, their car payment, their light bill, their water bill. And there's a lot of them absolutely scared to death that they have any medical claims, because if they do have any medical claims, they literally do not have any discretionary savings to cover those medical claims. So, your heart goes out for those situations. It's a very, 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 it's the most difficult math story problem that I've ever worked on. So I'll just leave it at that.
I think I might be able to kind of answer your question about being self-insured and versus the other. And the way I've had it explained to me is, if you are not self-insured and you go with, a certain company, and they're going to charge you, let's just throw a number, $3.1 million, but your claims are, and you pay that up front, and your claims are $2 million, then you've just lost the rest of that.
Sure.
So it's, pardon the expression, it's kind of a crapshoot. So it's definitely difficult and hard to, justify one way or another, I guess.
It would also be very difficult to move out of the self-insurance plan because of the annuity that you would have to set back for long term for claims that can be. So there's a huge expense to trying to get out of being self-insured. It's not just change from one type to another.
And that would cost us around twice as much I've seen policies that are close to $4 million. I've seen some that are as low as $2.5 million.
Well, it sounds like you've done due diligence on this, and I appreciate that. It's good to know. Thank you.
Question in the back there?
Since we're talking about health insurance, and I have all the details, can you explain, when you're self-insured, how much of the employee is that self? In other words, does the employee pay anything into that like a regular employee who has insurance with their company would?
Yes. And fairly high deductibles.
Is there a percentage?
That's another variable. That's a wonderful question. That's an area that we have got to look at, okay, because it's definitely a data point. Because clearly we have the discretionary authority to be able to go in and increase what the employees are paying out of their pocket, right? But then, you know, where's the balancing act on that? That's the challenge with it, so.
Thank you.
Question up front?
Yes. Is the employee paying part of their insurance premium every month?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And do they are their children and their dependents, are they on the policies? Are we paying for the children or their dependents?
Children are required to be part of their policy, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
By law. We've done the spousal carve-out where if a spouse has, correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, if a spouse has a better policy at another job, they're required to access that policy.
Mm-hmm. So
first.
Our employees' families are on our insurance.
No, it's their choice. Their spouse.
Yeah.
What?
It's their choice whether it be them or their spouse's policy.
They pay for it.
Right. I understood that.
And so with the children, minor dependents, it's required by law. So there's no way around that.
Yeah, and I just really appreciate Jim's work and experience in this area because I think he's really bottomed out. It's like a multi-layered chocolate cake. You know, there's the premiums that the employee pay, there's the premiums that the employer pays, there's the co-insurance, there's the administrative fees to SIHO, there's the APEX fees. And one of the things that is left over after you run out of layers of chocolate cake is a calculation that actually this group should own, which is what is the expected value of our claims for the upcoming year. And how, you know, I'm an engineer, I'm not a medical doctor. None of us really could look at the 146 individuals and come up with, is it going to be 800,000? Is it going to be 2.3 million? And that's one of the areas that I talked to Jim just one-on-one, is how do we get better at determining that expected value? It's easy for us to go see the previous year's data and then, you know, draw lines and linear fits and all that kind of thing through it. But that's really the big unknown here, and that's the financial risk that we have is, you know, Jim's covered on this, but if he doesn't get sick, then there's no claim to anybody for Jim. If Jim unfortunately has some very severe medical thing and consumes $750,000 of medical expense, somebody's got to pay that $750,000 between us and the reinsurance right?
Yeah, it is, and actually, the going forward, what you know, the seven of us have got to focus on monthly is we've got to figure out what can we do proactively to reduce the cost of the claims. And what I'm referring there is, let's say one of you need to have an MRI done. So you go to your physician, they order an MRI, they submit it to someplace in Greenwood. It's $1,200 out of pocket. Okay, and you haven't met your deductible yet. But then all of a sudden somebody within Brown County or vis-a-vis the third party plan administrator, which that gets into an issue of how proactive are they trying to mitigate our claims. They then realize that, wait a minute, you can go to Bloomington and have the same MRI done for $400. And that is at the very core of what we've got to work on, trying to reduce those claims. Because you get into those claims, and then you get into all these different various negotiated rates with all of these, this whole network, you know, this huge myriad of network. And so it's quite the story problem, let me just say that, so.
Maybe to just kind of close this, what we are doing for 2024 is we're looking at those claims from the previous years, working with Jackie, and we're putting a number into the 2024 budget that we think is a reasonable approach to cover that risk, that expected value.
Yeah, the goal is just simply to get caught up and try to be in the black from one year to the next. If we can at least do that, stop the hemorrhaging and stop carrying over this negative carry forward balance, you know, and then at the same time, do everything we can, because actually this is on the agenda this evening that I've got to address. Do everything we can to try to mitigate the cost, because, and I'm going to make a statement here, you know, keep in mind I'm licensed. I've got every license in the financial services industry that you could almost ever want to have, and I've been in the industry 33 years. Insurance agents are trained to perform excellent presentations. So they're a master on doing presentations. They got beautiful reports, glossy reports. And then they're absolutely trained as masters in overcoming the objections, all right? And then they're trained really well on how to close the sale. Because you got to remember, the insurance industry, what drives the insurance industry, and this is the challenge with the financial services industry as a whole, is it is a transaction-based relationship driven by commission. Okay? So I personally have absolutely no loyalty to any insurance agency, any insurance brokerage firm, or anything else. So one of the things we've got to look at is when this original program was set up with the firm, that relationship initially and still is based on a commission basis. So if we continue to stay with that same firm, that relationship needs to be shifted to one of which is an advisory relationship to where the county pays them a flat fee and there are in fact no commissions, okay? So that way they're no different than your CPA, they're no different than your attorney, you know. And if we can do that, then perhaps then that we can get them on the same side of the table to try to figure it out. Because this is a non-going every month, every month, every month, every month. And we're going to have to stay on top of it. So I think I've said too much as it is. So.
Okay. It's just an intro to what we're facing. We'll move on from there. We've got some old business.
Thank you.
Brown County Sheriff's Department received $19,000 insurance check that they would like to put in the Sheriff's Field Safety Security Line 1000.42000.005 for equipment that they need. Brad?
Yes, sir. That was an insurance check. We received this $19,544.62. We need to put that in our, if we can, put that in our Field Safety Security Line. We are in desperate need of tires, some vehicle maintenance repairs that we have spent everything. I know the budget is tight and we can't keep up. Vehicle maintenance has been through the roof. This money comes from a vehicle, damaged vehicle, so that's what we're hoping, if we can get the tires bought and keep things going. We're down another vehicle. They got totaled. That was another thing. I can talk about two things. I thought I was on the agenda for another issue as well, but I guess we didn't get that in time. Or I was going to ask for some money from our jail transport position, that both my jail transport officers retired due to short staffing this year with officers and Officer True's accident. We have absolutely smoked our overtime for our officers. I was going to ask if we could transfer money from jail transport out of the jail budget into the sheriff overtime budget. But so that'll be on the agenda next time. So, but we are out of money. We spent two, I don't know what we were at this pay period here today when we turned in, but last pay period to cover all the shifts where we were down, because I was down two road officers, it cost us $2,000 in overtime just to cover these shifts. It's getting rough. Down three jail officers, been informed that two more may be turning their resignation in, and I have one of those that I'm going to hire a jailer, so I will be down almost 50% of my jail staff if all this happens. I won't be able to take the guy from the jail to the road until I can get the jail kicked back up. So,
Brad, we can talk about this at a different date, but I do have one question that I've been spending quite a lot of time thinking about. Is when I look at the turnover ratio as a county whole, 48% the first 5 years, and knowing you got another 25% from year 6 to 10, you know, we all know we're going to have attrition, right? Mm-hmm. What does your department and or how do you guys recruit new people?
Through social media. We also go on ILEA, the Indiana Law Enforcement Academy's site, and advertise there or say okay. Positions open.
Because let me ask you, here's a thought. Should we, you know, as a county, some of the elected officials, council, commissioners, all of us, have some conversations centered around trying to put something in place to where we have a full-time recruiter, all right, that not only recruits for the sheriff's department and the jail, but also for other departments, you know, highway department. We've got a recruiting issue coming up with the health department here before too long. So, and I don't know that we have anyone that's really working to try to, you know, I don't know that we have a system in place that we're very clear about. You guys probably are, but as a county government, do we have a process in place where we're very clear about who we need to try to attract, how we're going to attract them, and it's an everyday, 5-day-a-week, 52 weeks out of the year, because we've got to have people in the pipeline.
I don't know where you get the money for that.
I don't either.
Where we are.
I don't either.
I would rather use those resources to pay some people to try to get them to stay than hire another additional person that's going to be recruiting. Recruitment for law enforcement, I think recruitment for everything. My better half owns a Mexican restaurant here in town that everybody knows about, and she is having a hard time recruiting workers there. So I don't think it's just my industry.
No, it's all country.
It's yeah. Everywhere.
Right.
So I don't know that recruitment is the answer. I think I know all my counterparts in law enforcement, our surrounding guys, I talk to them quite a bit. They're all struggling as well, except for they pay more and I lose people to them. So I don't know that a recruiter would help. I really don't.
But you don't know on the other.
I don't know.
You don't know that would or wouldn't. And no, I didn't expect you to answer that. So. But I guess my question is, you know, I think that's a conversation that we ought to have as a county. You know, even if we circle back around and say, no, it doesn't make any sense.
Just to inform you, the one vehicle that did get totaled, I'll be on the agenda for next month, too. We got the good thing about police vehicles, we buy them at a government cost, but they're insured for what they actually. So we did okay with this one as far as losing a vehicle. We have a check for $41,473. However, we are down one patrol car. So I was going to, we just got that check. I'll be on agenda to ask that to be put in where we can go ahead and purchase another vehicle with those funds.
If you're paying specifically for a vehicle, it can go in that line to replace. You don't have to additional appropriate that. It's ready to go.
Well, that's what I was just wanting to make sure that it didn't go just into the general.
No, it would go right into the line to replace the vehicle.
Okay. Well, I'm still new at this this part right here, so Trying my best to keep the wheels on the bus, folks, I promise you.
When it's an insurance refund, it goes right back to either repair the vehicle or replace the vehicle.
So you got a $19,000 insurance check that came from the total of a patrol car. The field safety security line is a maintenance expense account specifically for maintenance.
Yes.
And so your request is to deposit that $19,000 check in the field safety security line to cover upcoming maintenance issues.
Yes, it's not okay. Just a maintenance line.
Tires.
Yeah, well, it's maintenance in my mind. Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to make a motion that we approve the $19,000 insurance check to be deposited into the $42,000 account, which is the Sheriff Field Safety Line.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Say aye.
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 Thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
Can I get 30 more seconds of your time, Sheriff?
Yes, sir.
So we've been getting a report from our HR director of Holkins, and it seems like this might be understating your situation. So I'll just read through the ones that I think belong to your office. It's jailer time quantity 3, transporter quality 3.
I just had a certain amount there. I was down 2 transport officers, so I only had 2, so I'm down 2.
Only 2. Okay, so that's 5. The assistant to animal control?
Yeah, can't find anybody.
Okay. Is the corrections field officer yours or Ted's?
Corrections field officer is not mine.
Okay. And then part-time dispatcher? Are you fully staffed on this
one? No, I have no part-time. Well, actually, I have one that works a little bit.
And then we're down 1 road officer that...
Correct.
Due to the injury.
He's on the sick bank until October, like the first week of October. I don't know that date.
So I lost my count. Is that 8 people you're down?
Yes. I believe that's correct.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Brad. Okay, new business. We've got the approval and implementation process of underwriting county note. Okay, yeah. If you would take one and pass it. What I want to draw everyone's attention to on the council is that the county council has the ultimate decision-making power regarding fiscal affairs. The council has the authority to view and or review fiscal matters, determine proper policy, and to set priorities for the allocation and expenditures of county funds. And if you note down about midway, third bullet, it states fixing tax rates, establishing levies on all county property for the purpose of raising funds to meet budget requirements in Kentucky, conducting county business, as well as authorizing the borrowing of money in the form of bonds and notes. So the purpose of this, if you flip the page over and you look at it, the way it reads, it says Indiana Code Title 36, Local Government 36-2-6-18. It's addressed to the Brown County Commissioners. Please be advised that any past, present, future discussions and or negotiations, either written or verbal, by the Brown County Commissioners for the securement of any and all debt financing shall first require the prior written approval of the Brown County Council. And so what I would like for us to do is somebody to make a motion and a second, and let's vote to approve it, and everyone sign it, and then we'll submit it to the Commissioner's office.
More questions for us?
Yeah, absolutely. You can ask away, right?
Yeah. And your understanding of 36-2-6-18, does that include our ability to set the terms of whatever debt financing?
Based on my interpretation, unless, yeah. I mean, that's our responsibility.
So I might use the wrong term. Not the length and interest rate. But once the net proceeds are in our account, the approval of those people. for the employee.
Yeah, I think that is on...
Absolutely has to be appropriated.
Yeah, that's on the front end, and the council controls what, you know, if we're going to borrow money, an issue is what are we spending the money on? And again, let me just go ahead and, if I may...
Well, I'm talking about the financial control part of it, because the last $3 million bond issue, we were not involved with any of the distributions, and then the ARPA money came along, and we were told by the state to stay out of the way.
Right, but on the notes, that's our responsibility.
That's
so shame on us for not allowing and making certain that that money is spent exactly where it's supposed to go. That's our fault. And that's the purpose of this here.
Okay, great.
Because what prompted this, you know, this is not, you know, in any way pointed to any individual commissioner, all right? But my understanding is historically there's been a precedence that has been established. And also, to me, you know, maybe I'm wrong, Jackie, and if I am, then you step right in and tell me I'm wrong. But if I look at the Baker Tilly business model, who's our financial planner, you know, they do the financing part of a note or a bond issue. So they generate fee revenue to do part of that. So once they go in and do the financial piece, and they get done, then that gets handed off to Barnes and Thornburg, and historically I think it's been Tom Pittman that has done the actual underwriting on the note. Now the only difference between a note and a bond is a note is a short-term, bond would be say 20 years, 25, 30 years. So what we're talking about is short-term financing. The other thing that we're talking about here is that this short-term financing in the industry is referred to as a thin issue. All right, if Brown County was trying to issue a 30-year bond for $800 million to build a 70,000 arena for a music center, then it would be a lot different story. But because we're not going to try to borrow that much, right? Then what happens is, because it's a thin issue, that thin issue, usually you'll have a state-chartered bank, because I believe it was a state-chartered bank that bought the two bonds that were used to finance the music center, because there's one for $3.5 million, one for $9 million. And it was a private bank, bought the whole $12.5 million. It's a thin issue, no big deal. They buy it up, we pay them the interest, everybody's happy. So what I'm concerned with is at the last commissioner's meeting, there was some discussion about starting the underwriting process and begin to move down the pathway of doing this bond, note. And what I personally object to and will not tolerate is you do not go out and you do not give Baker Tilly the go-ahead to begin the underwriting process, and then Baker Tilly hands it off to Barnes and Thornburg, and then they get ready and they get done and they come to council and say, here, you guys need to approve this. We got $5 million. And here's the terms. I won't tolerate that. So what this does is this should send a very clear message that before we even talk about starting the underwriting process on a note, we have to get very crystal clear of how the funds are going to be spent, what they're going to spend on, making sure the estimates are accurate, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And once we understand how we're going to spend those funds, then and only then will the council then vote and authorize the terms and conditions of what we'll approve as far as the note.
Well said, Jim. I had a more succinct example where the SBOA let day-to-day flag us that the funds from the some of the monies from the $3 million bond issue were used for operational expenses rather than capital. So we've got to make sure going forward we have a financial control mechanism or any of these going forward where we can help oversee that.
Yeah, I think that's what this will do. Because if we're just a bunch of bobbleheads and we negate our responsibility, that's shame on us. So, I mean, everything we're talking about this evening all falls back on the responsibility of the council, period. So you're right. We can't, because I will not, there is no way I would ever vote to approve to pay operating expenses, to borrow money to pay operating expenses. Okay, because that's not any different than you taking your living expenses and throwing them on your credit card. It's basically the same thing.
Once you get this loan, you still have to appropriate the money for whatever they want to spend it on.
Yeah, I understand that.
Just like you do any other county.
Exactly.
So why didn't that happen with the $3 million bond?
It did.
It did.
At budget time.
Anytime they come in here and wanted money to do anything, they had to appropriate it through you. The only thing they didn't have to do that through was ARPA.
Yeah, but what I'm advocating is that before we even underwrite the note, we know specifically how the money's going to be allocated before we even underwrite the note, period.
Maybe I wasn't present when we approved the use of the ambulance expense out of the $3 million bond.
It was in the budget last year.
That's different than approving it to come out of the $3 million bond fund.
It was advertised and approved in the budget process.
Because I came to her every month, said,
this is month.
I said, give me a report on ARPA and the bond funds. She'd give it to me on Monday, and by Thursday, we'd say, no, that's not valid. And that ambulance contract bounced all around different funds. So, you know, whatever, we can do the post-mortem. But what we need to do is, I think Jim's making sure it's crystal clear going forward.
Correct.
Okay.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, I don't either.
Because it just gets you guys, your office in trouble, right? And the taxpayer's got to pay you for the audit.
I don't disagree with that.
I've made that comment. When that revenue, when that note comes in, it goes into a fund that is the note expenditure fund or whatever you want to call it. And for every debt that you have like that, there are two funds. One to collect property tax dollars to pay it back, and then one to spend the revenue that you received in the note. And so there are two for each of them.
And well, thank you for your comments, because we just needed to make sure it was clear what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, I think I voted against that, if I don't remember correctly. I want to make sure that we solve the problem, right? You're identifying the problem, and so what I want to just briefly discuss while we're talking about is how that will work. And it does seem like there's a little bit of wiggle room in this, Jim, as kind of Dave pointed out, your interpretation of, you know, before, after, during. And so I think at a minimum, what would be nice, now whether it's under here or not, I don't know, but what would be nice is if the council would approve at some point any expense plan for any bond that may or may not be approved. And that would include detailed expenses. It's not just we throw a number out there of $4-5 million without any idea what we're going to spend it on. It's, no, here's what we need the money for. These are capital expenses that you would typically take on debt to carry out. I think at the time I said that, you know, this isn't the kind of thing you take out to buy beer and cigarettes like you did in college or whatever, but...
Did you do that in college?
who knows? And it would be nice also, and Jackie, I don't know if this is, you know, it's probably more of a Barnes and Thornburg question, I guess, but it'd be nice if that expense plan changed, if we were required to be consulted and approved or disapproved. Well,
it's not in... That's the thing, Scott. It's not any different than any other money. You have to approve all expenditures of county money.
Well, I think we're talking.
If they change their plan, they've got to come to you and request a transfer of that money from what it was originally expended for or appropriated for to what they want to appropriate or spend it on. That moves. If it moves, then it should be. That's a transfer.
Yeah. So. You know, as long as they're aware of that and they do that.
Lot of times in those original notes that are put together, there is a plan in that note, and both bodies should be approving the ordinance or resolution or whichever way your county chooses to do it. Both bodies should be approving that before the loan is closed.
Now, the other part of it is, you know, who negotiates the terms? And you know, what we don't want to do here is throw among the commissioners do. Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's policy.
Yeah. And so what we're not trying to do here is throw some monkey wrench in, because it does say, you know, before they negotiate or before they do any, you know, just so it's known, I thought they did that negotiation. And a lot of times, as you know, you want to understand what the rates and terms are before you discuss how much is going to be, you know, it kind of all plays in.
Yeah, but Baker Tilly.
It's a joint effort.
Baker Tilly's kind of had, because this is a thin issue, okay? It's backed by, are we A-minus rated? So, you know, we're an A-minus rated municipal government. So there's, you know, low risk on this, right? And it's a private placement, so it's you know, so to me, it, Baker Tilly, they're going to know, right, what the rate's going to be, the terms, et cetera.
Yeah.
Because that's what, well, at least let me just say this. They should know that.
Yeah.
Because they understand the current interest rate environment, et cetera, right?
Sales and offerings. The other thing I would say is, I mean, I think the real elephant in the room here, use Jim's term, is what is it exactly that we need this money for so desperately that we are willing to issue debt? And why aren't we talking about that in our budget this year?
Well, I think, you know, for starters...
Can I help answer that just a little bit?
Your bond, it's kind of a trick.
Your bond was for 3 years, or your note was for 3 years. In the past, the history, and Jim, I'll just bring you into some history here. In the past, you used to do a two-year note, and every second year, then you would go out and get another two-year note that started tax collection in the next year. It then, the last time, went to $3 million and was a three-year. So you're not talking about new debt this year because you're still paying off the current $3 million note. The time you'll take out new debt, if you choose to continue that way, would be next year when this debt is falling off. The other purpose of using these notes this way is it's a way of you, for the council and the county, to be able to do things outside of the levy. Debt is outside the levy. And so that's revenue that you can use for those capital purchases, those one-time things outside of the levy, as opposed to tying your hands down and not being able to meet your budget needs.
Yeah, it makes sense. And, you
and
know,
a lot of counties do this. A lot of counties do short-term borrowing year to year to year.
Sure. I think it all comes back to the capital plan or lack thereof. And I think one department out of 24 provided a capital plan for the next 3 years, up to Parks and Rec, of all departments. I know from, you know, my first year serving here, that's been a critical priority for whatever reason. I mean, we funded, I fought for the funding, it was one of that, and, you know, tooth and nail, fight for $10,000 for Baker Tilly to help us do that. It's never happened. And so, you know, yes, this may be a three-year loan, yes, this may not be in next year's budget, but if we have looming priority expenses that we know of right now, we're talking about issuing debt, then why isn't the council talking about those expenses? You know, why aren't those in front of our face in the form of a capital plan? Why aren't we budgeting? Because I think what Gary showed up here does not include those expenses. So that cliff is much worse than what we're seeing. So, and I'm looking at Jim because I know he understands exactly what I'm saying, but you know, we've got problems, as you pointed out, and they're even bigger if this is, you know, assuming there are massive expenses here that we need to borrow more money for, they're even bigger than we thought.
So, to me, this just, all this does is, we, as the council, let the commissioners know that before they even consider getting into a engaging Baker Tilly to begin the underwriting process, that they're required to come before the council to get the written prior approval to for them to engage Baker Tilly, because that's where they're going to start. Now, Scott, I agree with you. The only thing I would add is that if I can get you guys to make a motion and to second and approve this, then perhaps what we do is we immediately turn around and develop the process that you're referring to and come up with an internal control. Here's the policy, here's the process, here's the procedure, right? Because what this says is this says you gotta notify us before you even think about signing anything with Baker Tilly and having them going out and start underwriting a new note. And then here's the process that we're going to follow Okay, which then gets into specifically, you know, how's the money going to be spent? What are the issues? Are the bids, you know, how are we, you know, for the audience to give you an idea, you know, there's numbers being thrown around between, and this has been going on for what, 2 years, 2.5 years, 3 years? We got AC units on the jail that need to be eventually going to have to be replaced. So that, you know, let's use a number of 700 grand. So there's 700 grand there, but also keep in mind, the commissioners decided earlier in the year to go ahead and pay $1.1 million for the courthouse project. Now, the good news with that $1.1 million in the courthouse project is that was paid out of cash reserves, but it drained all the money. I mean, it literally drained the money, and so now we don't have any money to buy any AC units, right? And then we got things like, for example, there's a $300,000 expense, you know, that's projected out of the clerk's office, because the clerk's office currently is not in compliance with state statutes as far as their record keeping. So the $300,000 is a fee from a firm out of South Bend to come in and do the digitizing of those records, which would then place us in compliance with the regulatory authority. And then lastly, with the thing that's been talked about for eons, is this issue with the prosecuting attorney's office. So if you just add those up, you're talking a considerable amount of change right there just on those three items. Now, what we don't know is what other issues are out there outstanding, and I believe Ron Sanders is really beginning to kind of take the champion that subject, which is great, and begin to look at the real estate that the county owns and, you know, maintenance issues, et cetera, et cetera. So Scott, I agree with you. Tonight, I was just hopeful that if we could get this done, get it out of the air, don't have to think it out anymore, and then if we could then develop a process that we could implement, all right?
Yeah.
That we could follow.
One thing I would just, the other thing that, you know, as Jackie said, this is a joint effort, right, between us and the commissioners.
Right.
And it, you know, I think this is a great thing, right? We're educating, but it does feel, you know, like we're not necessarily working. It feels like there's a little bit of a power play here. And so I just want us to be careful about sending this through our attorneys to their, you know, we are not, it's not an us versus them. I don't think that's what you're suggesting.
No, this is an internal document. I don't want to pay an attorney anything for this. All right? This should be an agreement between the commissioners and the council.
Have you talked to them about this?
Not yet.
Okay. That's my only suggestion.
It's, but I don't think they're going to have a problem with it, because we've already had discussions.
Yeah.
I mean, because this, you know, the story problem is going to require all of us to work together. And it's going to require us to really do a good job effectively communicating. And secondly, the thing that we're really going to have to work on, in my personal opinion, is we got to be clear when we make a claim or we make a statement. We want to make certain that we've got something to support that claim or support that statement. We can no longer afford to make claims based off of emotions, subjective anecdotal claims with nothing to support those claims. Because if we can't get very clear and concise and make sure that when we make a statement, we've got something to support it, then that causes problems within our communication, and that also erodes trust. So to me, it's critical going forward that, you know, we work on that. And so all I'm doing, Scott, is just simply, here's what the statute says, okay? And here's the process, you know, you come and see us, we'll sit down and talk to you anytime you want. You know, it's not like we don't already know that they're starting to work on this now, right?
Yeah, Ron came to us, I think.
I absolutely, you know, we are the council, and if the county, you know, first of all, I'm not responsible for the mess that we're currently in, because I didn't, you know, I'm 8 months old. So, but now that I'm aware of where we are, I've got to try to do something to, you know, hopefully be effective, and we can get this thing kind of turned, you know, get the ship turned around, if you will. But as we do that, we have got to put in internal controls. We've got to put policies and procedures in, as, you know, as Gary's mentioned over the years. There's just a lot of work that we've got to do, because this is a huge challenge. So, and this is just a first step, is all it is. So,
Take a motion?
You were correct. It was discussed in the meeting, but it wasn't advertised.
Yeah.
I went back and looked.
So one other fun fact here, we've got 14 point roughly $5 million of assessed value of properties that the government controls. But yet, to Scott's point, we don't have one single dollar in the 2023 budget or the 2024 budget to go to any operating and maintenance and or improvements or...
We get paid in lieu of taxes.
You ready to make a motion?
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, you said 14 million of what?
Assessed value.
That is not what? Market. Federal, state, local, school?
That's going down to our assessor office and say, run me a report of all title properties that the Brown County government, i.e. the commissioner's own.
Gotcha.
The total was 14.47 million.
Yep.
Okay. I'm supporting your point that there's not a single dollar in any budget.
It sounds low, but yeah, it's county,
assessed value.
Yeah, county government only, yeah. I agree. Yeah, I'm ready to make a motion.
Jim, the wording on your letter, you say please be advised that any past, present, future discussions.
Correct.
Should clarify any.
Do what?
Any currently or.
Please be advised that any past.
Right, any past, which.
Well, what?
Any past negotiations.
Okay, we
can't control all the past negotiations.
Well, all right, and
or currently ongoing.
The reason I sat down this afternoon and I drafted the sentence, okay, trying to put my, I'm not an attorney, but I'm kind of acting as one, all right, because I'm not an attorney and I'm not trying to provide legal advice or anything else, but past, present, future discussions, and the reason I put that in there is what I don't know is, has Baker Tilly had conversations, and I know for a fact that we have because I've been in those meetings, so that we have had past conversations, we've had, we may have present conversations, I don't know, and there possibly could be already scheduled future discussions, right? So all I'm trying to say in here is any of those discussions and or negotiations, either written, verbal, by the Brown County Commissioners for the securement of any and all debt financing, shall first require the prior written approval of the Brown County Council. Right? Now what this doesn't say, and it doesn't address, is if the commissioners have already signed an agreement with Baker Tilly to start the underwriting process, and it's dated and signed, because they can do that. That's their legal authority to do that. Then this is worthless. Okay? So what this is for is this is for anything from today's date going forward. That's it.
Strike fast.
Yeah, I mean, that's because if they did this last week and decided it's already in process, then there's nothing we, and what are we going to do?
Jim, I think if it's already, I mean, this is where it gets, I think, Jackie said, you know, it's really the commissioner's obligation to negotiate the terms of the loan.
Normally that's policy, but
I mean, that makes sense.
But they can't close that loan without the approval.
That's right. Yeah, when it becomes, and we want them to be as educated as possible on how it's going to work, what the terms are going to be. So I don't think what you're saying, Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, is you don't want them to have any verbal conversations with anyone about any of this until they get our written approval. I don't think that's what you're saying.
No, I'm not saying that at all.
Okay.
Yeah, no, all I'm saying is you guys can sit down and talk to Caitlin Cheek and Baker Tilly to be blue in the face.
Okay.
I don't care. But for goodness sakes, don't you even think about getting into an engagement letter.
Signing.
Right.
Don't get into an engagement letter to begin to move that process without our prior written.
That's why I voted no on the last one, because what we had negotiated that we would vote for came to us, it was a little bit higher, but that's the thing with government. It's just a little bit more. It's just 2 cents. It's
right.
No, it's not what we negotiated. Right. It's not what we approved.
Right.
So no.
Right. Yeah, and see, to me...
It was 10 minutes before I
started. Yeah, see, to me, based on my interpretation of the statute, okay, I'm the one that's ultimately responsible for this. So I'm not about to sit...
Or the financial control.
Yeah, period. And I'm not about... I mean, this isn't any different. This would be the equivalent to my daughter coming to me, okay, and go, here, Dad, I need you to sign this, because I can see Megan probably wanting to try to do this. All right? She goes out and buys some new freaking truck, and the next thing she knows, she's got it all done, packaged, and she's selling me like, you know, she's never sold anything before, and she wants me to co-sign on the note. And there ain't no way I'd ever do that. I'd look at her and go, well, you lost your mind? You know, first of all, what are you buying? Why are you buying it? And do you really need it? Okay, and how much is it going to cost? I'm not going to do that. And so I don't see this as any difference if I'm responsible, which I am, because then the other thing, too, is that first and foremost, let's not forget, okay, because this is another little, you know, bony. I do not like, and I will not listen to, and I won't tolerate when people make say, well, that's my money. Okay? When you hear a department head or anybody within the county, well, that's my budget, that's my money, you can't do that. Okay? What do you mean I can't do that? First of all, it's not your money, it's the taxpayer's money. And I have a responsibility, right, a stewardship, to make certain that the taxpayer's money gets spent with the best possible ROI, right? And making sure that you know our county is effective, we're efficient, and we're not throwing money, good money, after bad.
And comply with statutes.
And comply with statutes, thank you. Yeah, so.
So what I'm hearing from some people here is could be, instead of just discussions and negotiations, would it be more appropriate to be commitments?
Okay, I've read that if you guys want to take the next 30 weeks to try to re-edit and go for it, then go for it. But, you know, I've got a lot of time and effort.
You know, I would prefer if, you know, what I'm going to request is can we approve it as written? Okay, this is a simple issue. It's not a big deal. All right? We don't need any attorneys. We vote on it. We approve it. We sign it. We hand it off to Jerry Pittman. He'll understand. You know, I'll tell Jerry. Okay, it's not a big deal. And then, Scott, if we want to work on a process so that we all understand what process we want to follow, which I think is a tremendous idea, and we can also, if you all want to take this and you want to do an edit, rewrite on it, fine. Do an edit, rewrite, and then we can come back and approve the new version, because this would be version 1.0.
I think it also that we pass your memorandum of understanding between us and the commission.
I second it.
Perfect. Thank you.
Any further discussion? You have something to say, Karen?
No, the only thing I wanted to change was just sort of like strike past, present, and put
currently
relevant.
Can you send them the soft copy and make edits, and I'll talk about Red 2 next week?
Yeah, we can do that. I got it.
That's the only thing. Authorize it to be edited. It's kind of like we're almost.
We can spend the next 3 hours trying to do an edit, rewrite, and wordsmith for this thing.
Here, let's spend 30 seconds, strike the word pass.
So can we just, we've got a motion and we've got a second, so on as it's currently written.
Can we get one more piece of discussion?
Quickly.
Tim, I think you need to talk to commissioners about this. And, I mean, that's who we're talking to, right? You wrote the letter to them. And let's just make sure they understand that this lands in soft hands.
Scott, what happens if they come back and absolutely just jump up and down, scream and yell, and say absolutely not? What are you going to do? What was that?
That was a great time.
I don't know. I mean, they're reasonable people, and
let's just assume for a moment that they absolutely say, no, you're not going to do that. We're not going to buy it.
I mean, they might.
Okay, they could, right?
The rest is in there.
Okay. All right, well, first of all, this right here, okay, what I've got on the back,
yeah.
Okay, I want you to understand that everybody in this room can go to the Brown County website, go into resources, and find Chapter 4, Powers and Duties of County Officials. This came off of the Brown County website. And may I remind you, it states that the council has the ultimate decision-making power regarding fiscal affairs.
So you don't want to talk to them?
I don't think there's any. I don't have a problem with them.
Okay, I'll talk to them.
I just want to, we've got a motion, we got a second. I would like to get this approved, so I don't have to, let's just get it approved, then we'll all sit down and talk to them.
Your mess.
I mean, okay. Right. I mean, it's not, this is not some heavy-handed. Okay, so Okay, we got a motion to second it. Take a vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay.
So did everybody approve it?
Yeah.
And we, thank you. Can you guys put your name on it then, sign it and pass it down? Joel started it.
And then I'll give it to Jerry.
Okay, you got the one copy.
Yeah, we got one copy.
Scott and I talked to the commissioners.
If they got any issues, have them call me, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, next issue we have is the Henrietta insurance policy.
Okay, here we go. We got that all signed? You guys got that done yet? All right, take one and pass it. All right, and I'll try to be brief with this one. Earlier in the year, second quarter, because we're detailing the third quarter, there was the commissioners, myself, Judy was there, Gary, you were there. We had two individual meetings with the Henriot Group. And the Henriot Group is an insurance brokerage, insurance agency, old agency out of Lafayette, Indiana. And so they came down, perfect, thank you. They came down and we met with them. And we met twice. So they came in on the first meeting, a couple hours, did the discovery, they left, come back, and then they came back and gave us their dog and pony show. So what happened is they then went to follow up with the HR department and to find out, you know, where they stood and, you know, can we set up another meeting and have an additional meeting and continue the discussions about how do we reduce the cost of our group medical. So essentially what happened, according to Sean, that the Brown County basically just said, no, we're no longer interested and just wanted to disengage in the conversation. So I get a phone call from the rep. He explains this to me. And I told him in all uncertain terms, I said, well, I'll tell you what, we'll have a meeting. So we had a meeting last Thursday, and it was Gary Hewitt and I, and a couple other gentlemen here. And basically, it was real short and sweet. Are you going to save us any money, yes or no? Period. I don't want to hear any smoking mirrors. I don't want to see any stupid slides, okay? Can you cut the cost? And furthermore, if you can, I want it in writing. And I want to speak specifically to 2024. So, guess what I received, and you guys all have a copy of it. Upon implementation of the Henriot Recommended Specialty Drug Sourcing Program and implementation of Henriot's Recommended Stop Loss Consortium, Henriot is confident that savings opportunity for the county is strong enough. We agree to put our fees at risk should the savings not be realized in the 2024-2025 calendar. Henriot will guarantee at least $115,000 in prescription drug savings and at least $30,000 in stop loss premium, providing our presented recommendations are accepted by the county. In the event these savings metrics are not hit, Henriot will reduce its fees equal to the amount of savings target or missed, not to exceed Henriot's entire compensation. For example, if only $105,000 of prescription drug savings are realized, then Henriot will reimburse Brown County the $10,000 difference. So, the purpose of this evening is, here's, in writing, $135,000 worth of potential group medical savings for the fiscal year 2024. So therefore, I would like to make a recommendation, along with the rest of the council, that the commissioners simply review this, get a hold of Henriot, and do their due diligence. That's it.
Yeah, Jim backed me up a little bit.
No.
So... I'm just trying to catch up. We're negotiating new insurance premiums. What are we doing exactly?
Well, again, earlier this evening, Okay. We got 831 grand in red ink so far. We potentially may see $1.1 million. Next year's total cost estimated is $1.9 million, right? Well, if you take $1.9 million plus $1.1 million, that's $3 million. Okay, so as I said earlier, we have to, and this is the we. The we is the council, the commissioners, the auditor, right? Those that have the skill sets necessary to be able to try to focus and work on this to mitigate and reduce the risk, right? Because we've got to try to work on reducing the risk. And so that's all we're talking about. But that this focus, this has to be done every 30 days. You know, we've got to be talking about this so it keeps us focused and keep it on the top of mind. What we can't do, I mean, let me give you an example. I mean, we're paying Proactive MD 130 grand a year, okay, right now. And I don't know that if anybody's, I mean, I know I haven't done it. Who's done it? Somebody's got to go sit down with Proactive MD. And furthermore, if we're going to sit down and have a conversation with Proactive MD, hopefully the person that's got the conversation has some negotiating skill sets so they just don't lay down and play dead and let Proactive MD exploit us up one side and down the other. All right? So, because, you know, as far as what I've learned in the last 8 months is the private sector's out there, they're like vultures. They're out here trying to pull every dime they can out of the county and the municipal government. So what this is there's 145 grand, right, to change broker, to change insurance agencies, that second page. All you're doing is changing the agent of record. That's it. So, you know, the stroke of the pen, the commissioners could sign this one day and next day, Apex is gone, Henriot's in.
That's basically what I was going to say.
Yeah.
We're still with SIHO.
Yeah, SIHO.
Henriot has no problem with SIHO insurance.
Right.
The Apex is who we have now. They like SIHO. They're just trying to negotiate better prescription
right.
drug savings. They're trying to work with the Proactive MD, that type of thing. That's
they're insurance agents, okay? And I'm sorry, but we as a county... Okay, especially us as a council. We as a council are in charge of the taxpayers' money, and I believe we, and hopefully you guys will agree with the statement, that we should not have any sort of emotional attachments to any service providers. Fair? I mean, if one over here got emotional attachments going, well, I'm just going to do business with Bob because I've known Bob forever, and I like Bob. Okay, and Bob's over here charging us 12 times the going rate.
Okay, we need to move on. So what we're suggesting here is this is a recommendation. It's not a final decision at this point.
Yeah, I'm just asking.
Commissioners recommend or make the decision. We're recommending them to go look into this and verify the efficacy of it.
Right.
Okay. Any other questions?
Not having done this a lot on the council, and we're seeing... You know, I think it's the commissioners that are doing a lot of this, right? And
that's their responsibility, yeah.
And so I think what you're suggesting is that this is a potential entity that they should incorporate into their rebidding of this service.
Or they go back to Apex and say, hey, Apex, it's the proverbial, you know, you want to buy a Chevy. And so what do people do when they want to buy a car? They pit the dealers against each other, don't they?
Is this two?
It's the same thing, okay? Get three of them in there. And the reality of it is I have absolutely no loyalty whatsoever when it comes to this subject, all right? And
just give this to the commissioners.
Yeah, that's it. Well, I just wanted to review it with you guys. Well, I'm not asking anybody to vote. I just want to vote.
This is just information. We're doing due diligence to look at our financing, and we're recommending the commissioners take a deeper look into this.
Right. Well, it's real simple. They're saying they can save us $145,000 for 2024, and all I'm going to say is if somebody threw $145,000 in cash on the floor, would I have to go out and fight you to pick it up?
Okay. We're good at that.
Yeah. Thank you. Right.
All right. So we're going to recommend that to the commissioners. Next point of business is we've got some concerned citizens want to make a presentation regarding voting concerns. And just so you know, as we do this, if you have any questions or disagreements or thoughts,
you address, in a formal meeting like this, you address the council, not the other people. That's just the way it works in Robert's Rules of Orders. So hopefully the monitor will turn on in a moment. It seems to take a second.
Well, we appreciate you giving us some time. We are representing citizens
Is that microphone on? And you can just, or take it, it's battery operated, just make sure it's on, it'd be better. Tap it, see if it's working. No?
No. How about now?
That's great.
There we go. So we are concerned citizens, and we're concerned about the election integrity with the use of machines connected to the internet. And so as you guys are reviewing budget, we have some budget analyses that we would like for you to look at concerning the use of those machines compared to paper ballots and hand counting. So I'm going to turn it over to Joy. You go for it. Thank you, council members, for offering us this opportunity. I have here the Brown County Clerk and Election Board budget, annual budget combined. For 2024, it is over $516,000, and a five-year total, that brings it to over $2 million. If we extract out the personnel costs for that budget amount, and we can make some comparisons, we see that in 2020, it was adopted at $186,000. And if we compare that to the budget being asked for in 2024, that's over $248,000. And that is approximately a 75% increase from the 2020 budget. By comparison, the off-cycle election years 2021 and 2023 are roughly a third of the 2024 budget. And in this presentation, I have some ideas for how to reduce this 2024 budget by eliminating electronic voting systems. It will reduce this to roughly a little bit over $60,000. Electronic voting systems have a number of leases and licenses associated with them. Leases are because we don't own them, and licenses are for the software that is used to run on these equipment. In 2020, if you look here, we have a fee for $100,000 for a P&G lease, and that equipment went obsolete and then dropped off, and that money is now gone. In 2021, we have a new piece of equipment for the tabulator, and it is almost $50,000, and you'll notice that's in a non-election year. In 2022, it's another $30,000. 2023, another non-election year, it's a little over $5,000, and in 2024, it's expected to be a little over $63,000. That's the equipment lease, and the licenses for the software on those equipment in 2022 is over $46,000. In 2023, a non-election year, is over $11,000. And in 2024, it's expected to be over $16,000. The voter registration system, which is the electronic poll system books, they have a lease. And that lease began in an off-cycle non-election year, 2023, and it is almost $24,000. And it is expected to be $24,000 again in 2024. The license to operate those e-poll books started in 2022 and was $5,000, and we're still paying for it in an off-cycle year of $1,000 over that, and it will be approximately $6,000 in the 2024 budget. The MiFi contract, that's a wireless agreement contract, because this equipment requires wireless internet connectivity, in 2020 was $3,500. In an off-cycle year, 2021, it was over $3,700. In 2022, it was $1,200, and we expect to pay again $1,500 in 2024. All of this equipment to be moved from storage to their polling places and then back to storage after elections has a moving voting machines fee of $6,000, and truck rental for movement of that equipment is another $6,000. So here we have a total for electronic voting systems for the year 2024 of over $122,000, And if we eliminate electronic voting systems in Vernon County, we will immediately save $122,900. Election poll workers are already in the budget. We have ample amount for absentee voters, election day voters. It's more than the 2020 budget, and so we have ample amount in that. We have a meals cost that seems high at $6,000, and I think we could reduce that to probably about $500. Poll worker training fee is $9,500, and electronic voting systems require specialized training for clerks and poll workers through the vendor. And training for hand counting would be a small fraction of this cost, because hand counting is simple, and training of hand counting is very inexpensive. So we could probably reduce that to about $500. And that brings us to a new total in this category of $40,000, and that allows us to save $14,500. Election paper ballots are already in the budget. Ballots and printing are $12,000 for 2024, which is almost double what we had for 2020, so ample amount already in the budget for ballots. We have computer maintenance and equipment fees, because proprietary equipment requires special repairs and technicians to do that repair. We have postage here for $3,000, another postage for $2,000, a postage machine lease for $1,000. And why do we need all of that postage? Well, we have mail-in ballots. And if we were to eliminate mail-in ballots, we could probably reduce that amount to about $1,000 and not even need a postage machine lease. Stationery and printing, $500. Stationery and printing, $5,000. Why do we have so much for stationery and printing? Well, in order to get mail-in ballots, we have to issue out and mail a application for a ballot. And along with the ballot, then comes the signature envelope. If we didn't have mail-in voting, we could probably reduce that to about $1,000. So that brings us to a new total in this category, $15,800, and we could save $9,500. Elections, meetings, legal, travel, and mileage. We have legal notices for $600, legal services for $500, legal services for $2,500. And we are fortunate to have capable and qualified representation on our election board, so perhaps this is not needed. Meetings for $6,500, meetings for $5,000, mileage to those meetings, $600, travel expense for those meetings, $1,500, travel expense for those meetings, $1,000. And if you are using electronic voting systems, then there are sales and training programs that are done on-site at those vendors in various places, and they're very expensive. So if we eliminated electronic voting systems, we could probably decrease this amount by 90%. That would bring us down to $2,000, and we would be able to save $16,200. Office supplies. Here we have $6,000 for office supplies. $4,500 for office supplies. Why are office supplies so expensive? Well, electronic voting systems require proprietary ink cartridges, flash drives, and etc. And those are reflected here in those supply costs. Repair equipment again, $500. Repair equipment, special technicians to do those repairs. Official records, $5,000. Electronic voting systems make proprietary reports that become official records costs. We have dues and subscriptions, $800. Dues and subscriptions, $150. Electronic voting systems require vendor dues and or subscriptions to indicate to their customers when the equipment is to go obsolete and when they will have to purchase new equipment. So I propose that we could reduce this amount by eliminating electronic voting systems, decrease by 90%, and bring us down to $2,000 again in this category. And that would save us $15,750. Other distributions, looking into some of these, it looks like there are more office supplies, so I think we could reduce that to 90% and bring that down to $1,000 for office supplies and save $9,000. In summary, hand counting, same-day voting of paper ballots, and paper bowl books will eliminate fees allocated for licenses and leases, etc., of electronic voting systems, and will immediately save $122,900. We will also eliminate related costs due to electronic voting systems, such as the vendor training and vendor meetings on site. And if we eliminate multi-day voting, we will save an additional $64,950. This brings us, all in all, to a total savings from eliminating electronic voting systems and multi-day voting to $187,850. The choice we have, then, is to budget with electronic voting systems and same-day voting at the over $248,000 amount, or we can budget without electronic voting systems and have same-day voting, and that brings us down to just over $60,000. Any questions?
Thank you. Any questions?
Yes, I do. How's the military overseas supposed to vote if we don't want to get rid of mail-in ballots?
Absentee ballots.
There's a difference between mail-in and absentee.
Yes, absentee ballots go for military and people over 65 and others who are out of state. Mail-in ballots are just sort of a generic thing.
And it's a convenience. State called. They're not.
Pardon?
They're not something you can get out and going to. They're meetings that are state called. You have to go to those meetings.
You could get an absentee ballot.
Wouldn't you? Thank you for your time.
Were you going to send that to us?
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Comments?
There's one in the back.
Hi, Michelle Havlin. I know we go to the town council meetings, and I have to say my name and where I live, so I don't know if we have to do that here.
Sure.
I live on Gatesville Road, and I'm just used to the rules. So I just want to say something that during the presidential elections that we're having right now, the people that are going to be running are actually promoting this. So I don't know if any of you have heard this.
The resolution?
They are actually promoting this for there to be...
It's greater voter integrity, basically.
Some candidates are actually wanting this. So it's not something that we should not know about right now. This is
right.
Not form.
I heard Representative Hutchins promote this just Friday.
And actually people on the other side, you know, all sides.
Yes. Okay. Any other questions, comments?
I'm Phil McCown, and I didn't even know this was on the plan for tonight, but I talked to some nice people here, and they say this is important. So this is my knee-jerk response, but I think we really should decouple electronic voting systems and same-day voting. Now, there are obviously pros and cons with both of those concepts. The electronic voting system, to me, seems like a pretty sound one, in that we would have paper trail, we have to do review of elections, we have the evidence right there then. And obviously the expense is significant compared to a paper ballot. I don't see how any of those claims, though, validate the idea of imposing same-day voting. I don't see that there is any jeopardy in the validity of votes because they are cast early. I've done that in the past at the courthouse, and it's just like going to on the voting day. Mail-in ballots, as we mentioned. I know there are differences between that and absentee that you just explained, but I think it should be a person's prerogative to mail in a handwritten ballot. So my request is that we consider these two ideas separately rather than coupled. I realize that means there would be a smaller savings, but I think we would, one, protect the integrity of the vote, and two, give the opportunity for people that need to have a voting opportunity other than the same day. That's why that whole system got started.
Okay, thank you. We'll be discussing this further with our election board and clerk, so it's still in process.
Good.
Okay.
Anything else on that?
That's it.
Appreciate that. Council, anything else? Tim?
Motion to adjourn.
Tim, are you sure there's something? Yeah, okay.
Shut up. Second on the motion, anyone?
What are you doing?
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye?
Yes, absolutely.
Nice job.
Okay, so that's quite a dare.